Welcome back, everyone, to episode 127 of the Chaos Ball Podcast. We come to you here today in February, the month, nay, the week before, almost. Well, actually, yeah, exactly. This is exactly a week before the Mariners pitchers and catchers report. Kyle Raleigh and Brian Wu were already at the Waste Management Open in Arizona, getting ready for everything, getting there. Kyle's getting his swing ready. I saw him hit a golf ball today on the internet from the right side. You know where I'm going with this. Does he also hit from the left side? I'm assuming golf-wise, he sticks to what's best for him, whereas in baseball, he's best at both. But I'm curious. I wonder if anyone has the answer to that. But we're here. And Jerry transacted. He finally did it. He finally acquired a player that felt like he was on the team the entire offseason. Really. It felt like he was a Mariner since mid-November, when I feel like the rumors started, when the Cardinals were going to trade him. Of course, it's Brendan Donovan. But real quick, before I get into the Brendan Donovan trade, which is going to be the meat of this episode, obviously, it's a big move, and it's one of the pretty much the only notable Mariners news of the last couple weeks that pertains to the on-field product in 2026. I do want to give a moment to salute Rick Riz. 2026 is going to be his last season calling Mariners games on the radio. He has been doing it for 4 years. He is a legend. I love Rick Riz. He really is a formative figure in my life growing up as a Mariners fan in the time that I did. I've talked about this before and why Dave Sims was more the voice of the Mariners for me than Dave Niehaus, because Dave Niehaus was a little bit before my time, although I do remember him. Rick has been my favorite Mariners announcer. Dave was probably up there as number two. But when you listen to radio games, and listening to radio games are quite the treat, and I simply need to, this is a good reminder, I need to do it more in 2026. I live out of the area, so it's a little harder for me than it used to be, but I need to find a way to listen to more of those games, and I think I just need to buy the MLB TV radio subscription, which is, I think, $2 or $3 a month. It's going to be worth it to hear more Rick in his final season. He is really, I think he's everything you want in a radio announcer. His voice is fantastic. I think he knows when to kind of let it breathe a little bit, but on the radio, you do have to talk a lot more than on TV. I think he's just really good at his job. On all accounts, I've heard he's a really nice fella. Salute to Rick. We love Rick. 2026 is going to be quite the send-off for him, I feel like. It's because he could have just announced his retirement after this season and didn't, or not announce it before the season, but now we get to give him his flowers, and I feel like his final game, whenever that may be, I think I'm going to cry. I think I'm going to cry when he, like, finally says goodbye and signs off. That's going to be an emotional time. And let's hope it's in November. Let's hope it's in early November. And that's all. I'll leave it at that. I am going to talk a little bit about the pitching depth later this episode as well, and maybe a couple odds and ends, that sort of deal at the end of this episode. But why are we here? Why have we gathered here today to take a look at the Mariners roster once again? Because Brendan Donovan, as I said, is finally a Seattle Mariner. Finally. Here I was on Monday, it was evening for me. I was in Mexico. I was at an airport in Mexico. My flight was boarding in like 10 minutes, and I get the passing notification that Brendan Donovan has been traded to the Mariners. And I was, it was like a sigh of relief. It was the breaking chains photo meme. Like, it was just like, fine, like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. He's finally a Mariner. And then I saw the Rays were involved in this trade, and I, in this airport in Mexico, let out an audible chuckle because I simply cannot believe he had to get the Rays involved. Now, since this deal was ongoing probably most of the offseason, the rumors started months ago, and it made sense, obviously, that the Cardinals were going to trade Brandon Donovan. The Cardinals had a high asking price. There was a lot of back and forth, I feel like, in and around the winter meetings, right after the winter meetings. And then there was just a lull for a while, it felt like. There was no news. I think talks probably just stalled. Chaim and Jerry took a beat. And then clearly they picked back up after, in and around when the Giants were involved. And then the Giants pivoted to sign Luis Arraez to play second base, which is a choice for sure for them. They were never going to beat the Mariners in terms of their ability to win the heart of Chaim with prospects. Like, that, they were literally never going to. And I think once the Giants pivoted and probably realized it just was not a feasible deal for them to do, I think it was a foregone conclusion at that point then that Brandon Donovan was going to be a Mariner. I don't think it was ever going to go into the season. But it sounds like, obviously, they couldn't quite get the deal over the line. And when you can't get a trade through, when there's just, when they just want one other prospect who's worth a little bit of something, who do you call? You call the freaking Tampa Bay Rays. And if you're Jerry DePoto, who's now made, by my accounts, 20 trades with the Rays, did I count that correctly? No, this is number 19. This is number 19, okay. 19 out of 198 trades have been with the Rays. He just had to get involved in that, and that got the deal over the line. Obviously, that is why we're here. The deal, I love it. I love this deal. It's a great deal. The Cardinals got, I think, a really good haul for Donovan. I think this was probably about as much as they could get, which says a lot about him as a player, and I think they handled this pretty well. They got some variety of guys. They got a close to MLB guy and then a pitcher and a really intriguing athletic high school pick from a year ago in Ty Pete. But it was Ty Pete, Gerangelo, Saincha, Colton Ledbetter from the Rays, and then two comp round B picks, one from the Mariners and one from the Rays, number 6-8 overall from the Mariners. In the upcoming draft. Saincha, obviously the big name here. Everyone, I feel like, knows him because he's the switch pitcher. And this was super interesting timing because I felt like a day or two before, there were reports out of Mariners camp that Saincha was going to focus on just throwing from the right side. This spring training, he wasn't going to rule out throwing from the left side either. It sounded like they were still going to allow him to work that out, but he was going to focus on the right side because that's just where he is currently looking better. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to go back to throwing from the left side because it's probably worth pouring all of your effort into perfecting the one arm, I would say. And that arm looks good. It's a good upside on Saincha. I mean, he was a college pitcher, but he's got up to Double-A last year. He is hitting really good velocities from the right side, and it feels like he's a mid-rotation upside guy, potentially. Like, that feels like his ceiling is like a number three, which is really great to get in a trade. Ty Pete just kind of made the move to center field recently. It sounds like he's adapting well out there, really good athlete. I loved his swing in the draft that the Mariners took him, when they took him as one of the three high school players with Formello and Emerson in last year's draft, where they had, or not, I can't say last year's now, 2 years ago, draft. And he just feels like a good swing, like really high upside, low floor swing for the Cardinals. It just feels like this guy's always, one of these guys is always in a trade. High schooler, former athlete, like potentially really intriguing power, speed, center fielder now, but striking out a ton. And I think Colton Ledbetter, I don't want to talk about. Rays, a fine prospect. Looks like he's definitely going to get looks with the Cardinals this year in Major League Baseball. Maybe even make the team out of camp if they make another move before then, because the Cardinals are going to be bad. And the comp picks are always good to have. The Cardinals are poised to have a like franchise-defining draft, good or bad. Like, this is going to be a really important draft for them to nail. They might even, they could get more comp picks by the time the draft rolls around, because they still have guys to trade. But this, I think, this is a deal that you do, I think, every day of the week, if you were the Mariners. Saintia and Pete are not prospects that I am clutching, necessarily. I think, at this point, and I'm far from a prospect clutcher. I think if you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm pretty much down to trade any prospects at any time. Like, if the price is right, I am willing to bet on guys I think are good at the major league level now, more of a sure thing than prospects. I think if I am the Mariners right now, I probably have Colt Emerson as my untouchable, because he's a shortstop who can play a good shortstop and looks like he can hit for power and has quick hands. And that is just not something you're going to come across that often. And maybe Cade Anderson, because I think he could just impact the team so soon after getting drafted last year. I think every other prospect for me is on the table trading-wise. So I think this is not a deal I would have said no to. Like, I'm not upset at losing either of those guys. Now, I'll address the elephant in the room. They didn't just give up Saintia and Pete. And this is why it's my hard pivot to saying this deal's garbage for the Mariners. Ben Williamson is now off the team. The Rays swooped in here, gave up a comp pick and Colton Ledbetter for Ben Williamson. I honestly love this for the Rays. They didn't, like, that's not really much for them to give up to get a guy who, listen, I don't think Ben Williamson is a good hitter. You know my thoughts on Ben Williamson if you listen to this podcast. I think the discourse around him got so incredibly weird last year. Like, he's not a very complicated player, and I don't understand why on either end of the spectrum people, like, hated him or loved him and, like, really went to bat for either one of those sides. And he's not a complicated player. We see players like this all the time. He looks like a really, really good fielder, like truly a Gold Glove caliber day in, day out third baseman, which is awesome to watch. And a guy who has good contact ability at the plate, but just cannot, like, he can't hit for power. And I don't know if he's going to be able to get on base enough to ever be an above-average hitter in Major League Baseball. It's not that complicated. There is a decent player in there. And I think the Rays said they already are going to try to play him at third, shortstop, and second, which makes sense. I think a utility role for him is mainly like a defense guy who can not strike out a ton despite really not impacting the ball. Like, that is a fairly valuable player to have as, like, the 25th or 6th man on your roster. And he would have been for the Mariners. Like, a guy like that could put up 2-3 baseball reference war, because they value defense a lot in year in, year out, just by playing awesome defense and not, like, completely being, like, sucking at the plate. Like, if he's just, like, a 80 WRC plus guy who plays incredible defense and runs the bases fine, like, that is a player that could stick in Major League Baseball for a little while. It just, he's not ever going to be like he's not even going to make or break your season. So I like this for the Rays. They got into this trade. They got out a guy who's going to provide them some utility. I'm so glad he's not on the Mariners so we don't have to keep having conversations about him, truthfully. I hope he's good for the Rays. I hope he learns how to pull the baseball in the air significantly and hits 30 home runs a year and wins the MVP. That would be amazing. But I had really not resigned myself. I had really just gotten comfortable with him being on the Mariners next year or this season. I gotta say this year and this season. It's 2026. Because like everything I just said, I think there is some utility in having a player like him. I was not thrilled with his role on the Mariners next year, which was going to be potentially winning the third base position on opening day or for opening day, or being like a full-on platoon guy with Cole Emerson or something. I was not thrilled with that. I would have liked him as the last guy on the bench who can play great defense, come in late games, anchor the left side of the infield's backup shortstop, even if he's going to be that good with the glove. But not sad to see him go. Now, what did they get in Brendan Donovan? We've talked about Brendan Donovan on the show. I feel like he's been on the team this entire time. He makes so much sense for where they're at right now as a team. Like, the lineup is likely set. I think we kind of know exactly what this team is going to look like going into the season. Obviously, barring any injuries, I think I really like where this lineup is at, and I'm going to focus on that specifically right now because I'm not thrilled with the bullpen, but we'll get into that later. I love where this lineup is at. I think Donovan is going to lead off against right-handed pitching and probably be in the mix against lefties. I don't know if he'd lead off, and I don't think he's not going to be a platoon guy. You don't acquire a guy like you don't make that trade for a platoon guy, but he's going to be an everyday player, probably gets a rest here and there against lefties, but he will be an everyday player. He's going to lead off against right-handed pitching. I'm intrigued to see if they just say, screw it, he's going to lead off against both, because he's a tremendous, tremendous on-base guy. I think with Williamson gone now, too, I think he's going to be the opening day third baseman. Like, I'm assuming we're going to see him mostly at third base to start the year, but that could prove wrong. It just kind of depends on spring training now. And he's going to probably play the corner outfield a few times this season too, just with how once you get into the middle of summer and injuries happen and rest days are needed, he'll probably end up in a corner at some point. But I love this move because of how not confident it makes me on where he's going to play, because that is the luxury of acquiring him. He is defensively versatile. He's not amazing defensively, but he can play the positions they need, which is second base and third base. Like, that is where this depth chart was lacking. And he brings just another element into the fold for this lineup. Like, I talked about his abilities on here before. Like I said, he's an incredibly steady ball player, first of all. Like, he's not a shining star on the field, but the versatility, incredibly helpful to have. His ability at the plate is just so consistent and well-polished. Like, he's just a good hitter. Like, just a very good hitter through and through. Doesn't strike out much. Gets on base a ton, hits for a fine amount of power to complement the on-base ability. Like, when you look at it and you see the home run numbers in modern baseball, the alarm bells go off a little bit. However, there's enough power in here where he hits a decent amount of doubles to go along with his on-base ability. Like, his career slugging percentage is .411, which is not awesome, but it's not garbage. His career on-base percentage is .361. That is one of the, pretty much every season has been one of the 5 to 10 best on-base players in baseball. Not like the best base runner, not going to give you a ton of utility there. But again, he adds to the Josh Naylor type of like dimension this lineup needs in terms of a low K contact guy who's hard to pitch to. And it is so, it's so nice to have that around Julio and Cal. Like, this is obviously a floor raiser for this team because the offense is going to flow through Cal and Julio when they're humming. Those are your two guys with MVP ceiling, not only because what they do in the field, but at the plate, they can just, they're game changers, right? Those are guys who you need on the base, on your baseball team to win the World Series. You need guys who can win the MVP or just place in like the top five of MVP. Like, every World Series winner pretty much has one of these guys, and they have two. But now having Donovan, JP, Naylor, Randy, and like even Ref Snyder in there against lefties surrounding those two, who've all been consistent contributors at the plate for years now, is just a really, really good situation. Like, this is a better, more diverse lineup than they've had in such a long time. Like, it's similar to how we saw this lineup after the trade deadline in 2025, but I think it's better with Donovan. Because Polanco is playing great, but it's a different player than Donovan. And you add Donovan and sandwich Julio and Cal in between Donovan and Naylor. You make a Julio-Cal sandwich with Naylor-Donovan on base percentage bread. And that is just an incredibly good top four of the lineup. And then Randy Rosarena, who was so inconsistent last year, but you know how good he can be. And on the whole, he had a good year last year. It's just a good lineup, man. Like, it just is. Like, where does Roster Resource have this lineup right now? And this is against right-handed pitching. Donovan, Cal, Julio, Naylor, Randy, and then Canzone, JP. And then after that, it's Robles and Young, which you can kind of swap for whoever there. But that top seven is really solid. Like, this is, I think it's the top, what, top three lineup in the American League right now. I think I'm pretty confident in saying that. I think the Blue Jays are in there, and I think despite the narrative around the Yankees right now, they still have a good lineup because they still have Aaron Judge. But I think I would challenge any lineup in baseball's depth. Maybe, okay, the Dodgers lineup is kind of insane, but I would challenge any lineup in baseball to the depth that now they have when they put their best nine guys in the lineup. So this is just a good situation. And I feel pretty damn confident that this lineup and team can take this team really far. And then you mix in the other great aspect of this trade. You mix in the younger upside of Cole Young and Colt Emerson. I almost just called him Colt Young. Because you give, this move gives runway to both of them now. Like, this is such a nicely fitting move, because now you give Cole Young and Colt Emerson the opportunity to battle it out in spring training, not even for the same position. You have Brendan Donovan poised to play third base or second base. And no matter what happens, he's going to be in the lineup. So you just give Cole Young and Colt an opportunity to show you something in spring training. And if Cole Young looks like he's made improvements since his short stint in Major League Baseball last season, and you feel confident in him, you start him at second base on opening day, and Brendan Donovan plays third. And if Colt Emerson blows you away, then vice versa. Cole Young probably on the bench, and Brendan Donovan plays second on opening day, and Colt Emerson plays third base on opening day. I think this move is so good for that reason. Like, if Colt's making the opening day roster, it looks a little less likely than it did before, I would say, because before it was like he's battling Ben Williamson for third base or Cole Young for second base. And now he has like a legitimately great major league player in front of him in Brendan Donovan, but there's still an opportunity. Like, again, if Young flounders at second base, even if they just run with, we're going to stick you, hey, Colt, we're going to stick you in AAA to start the season. We don't want to rush you. Cole Young looks good in spring training, but if he starts floundering at the start of the season at second base and Colt is lighting up the PCL, again, very easy to shift the lineup around to accommodate Colton Emerson getting a call-up. I think what this move does do is, you know, right field isn't, like, totally settled. I feel like this does kind of push Luke Raley out of the fold right now. Because, I don't know, it depends on spring training. But Canzone earned that job last year. He filled the hole when Victor Robles got hurt. And then Luke Raley was hurt and also not good. He filled that hole really well in right field. He did not have a good showing in the playoffs. But we can move on and forget about that for right now. And he's like a backup first baseman, but Naylor is also a lefty, so that's not incredibly helpful unless an injury happens. When Cal's not catching, he's going to be DHing a lot, so that gives less reps at everyone for DH, for everyone at DH. Like, Robles will hit in right field when a lefty's on the mound and when they need defense, and Canzone will DH and probably play a good amount of right field against right-handed pitching because he earned that job. So Luke Raley's kind of the odd man out. I'm surprised he wasn't tossed into this trade. I don't think it's bad to have him on the roster because they don't have a tremendous amount of outfield depth in the high minors, but I don't think that Luke Raley is going to be particularly happy to just be a guy who's bouncing up from AAA to the major leagues. Now he's going to have to deal with that. He's a professional. He's on a contract. But you look at who they have in AAA, and it's like Rylan Thomas, Spencer Packard, who I've talked about being a little bit interested in, Victor Labrada, who's down there, Sammy Siani, actually, who they signed as a free agent this season, who is at least a little bit interesting. But that's kind of it at the high minors. Like, Laz Montez is not close yet to the big leagues. Like, Jared Sundstrom's still probably in AA. Formello's not making the big leagues in 2026 unless he is an absolutely insane person. So I think having him on the roster is good. I just feel like it really does make him kind of the odd man out on this bench. He's a little redundant with what Dominic Canzone does. And if Dominic Canzone just does it better, I don't know. I expected Raley to be in a deal like this, just as like another player. Like, instead of Colton Ledbetter, you get Luke Raley. But I understand why the Cardinals wanted to bet on a prospect versus what Luke Raley has shown you the last two seasons. God, his 2024 was great, though. Last year was just bad. Like, he hurt and bad. Just a tough combo. But that's it pretty much for my thoughts on the trade. Now, there's not much else to say about the roster construction because we need to just go into spring training and see what happens. Like, it's going to be legitimately very fun to watch the battle between Cole Young and Colt Emerson. I don't think we have been as excited about a prospect as Colt Emerson since Julio and Jared Kelnick, basically, in 2022. And Colt Emerson is a little bit different because I feel like there's just extra panache talking about a shortstop prospect who could be as good as Colt Emerson could be. But I do want to talk about another elephant in the room, and it's J.P. Crawford. I've said this before. I said this earlier in the offseason. I don't think the Mariners are doing anything about J.P. Crawford. I think he's still a player that can be very valuable to this team. I think he still offers you something at the plate. His on-base ability and just general sense of the zone is and has been one of the best in Major League Baseball for years now. It's just him in the field that is just not good anymore. Was it ever good? You know, but was it ever great? No. It's especially not great now. He is making like $9 million this year. Like, they're not going to trade him. I think people at the start of the offseason were like, yeah, just trade JP. And I pissed all over that idea because it doesn't make sense. But I think there's going to be a legitimate conversation. Let's just, like, even if Cole Young's not good, Cole Young doesn't have to be good in this scenario. If Cole Emerson is ready, and the Mariners are going to give him all opportunity to make the team out of camp, if he's ready, when or do the Mariners ever even talk to JP about moving to second base? Like, it would obviously make sense. Getting him off short, I just don't think he's good for that position anymore. Second base would make more sense. He'd probably be fine at second base. Colt Emerson looks like he's going to actually be a pretty damn good shortstop defender. He's improved a lot at that position. It is a logical question for us as fans and the front office and coaching staff to ponder. Like, is the team better off with JP moving off of short and playing second base, staying in the lineup, but allowing Colt Emerson to play shortstop? That gives them a better defense. Now, the offense is up in the air for Colt Emerson. Still, any prospect's offense is up in the air. Hitting is really hard. But, I mean, there's a good argument to be made that JP moving to second and Colt playing shortstop would help this team a lot. Like, having going from a bad shortstop defender to even an average shortstop defender, it can make a huge difference in the pitching staff. A huge confidence boost in the pitching staff and just an analytical advantage to your team. So I think that's a legit conversation. Where it stops for me is, like, I just don't think they mess with JP. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He is a leader in the clubhouse. He's been the shortstop for, what, 6 years now? 7 years? 7 years. I don't think you or they are going to mess with them. Like, I wouldn't. This is something I would do if I was playing out of the park baseball, you know? Like, yeah, last year I would have probably moved JP to second base in out of the park baseball because it's really easy to do that when you're playing on a computer and their emotions don't matter. But I think at this point he's in year 8-9 of his major league career. He's been a shortstop. I think you just let him ride it out as a shortstop, despite it not being great. Now, does that preclude them from, if Colt Emerson is in the big leagues, which he will be this season, like, late game substitution? Colt Emerson swap for JP Crawford for better defense? I think that's on the table. Does that hurt JP's ego? Maybe it would a little bit. Would it? Should they care about that? Probably not. That seems inconsequential to, like, harming the locker room. Full on replacing him at shortstop, getting him off the position. Yeah, I think that genuinely actually would do something negative, despite the positive on field result that would cause. So I still am just kind of in the camp, nothing is going to happen. And if Colt wins the job, or wins a job, it's going to be mainly at third base, or even second base. Like, if they just feel comfortable with Donovan over there at third, and Cole Young can take a back seat, I think JP's at short until the end of the season, or until if he gets hurt. I just think that's the way it's going to be. I'm excited about this lineup. But moving on from the lineup, let's talk about the pitching staff really quickly. Logan Evans got Tommy John. That sucks. Logan Evans was like the de facto sixth starter, which, I mean, listen, that's not amazing, but at full strength, this pitching staff can be very good and has been very durable in the past. They weren't last season, but durability is never something you can count on, so having any amount of depth is helpful. Despite Logan Evans not being good last year, I still think there's something interesting in there. Now with Tommy John, I just don't know. But I still just, there was something interesting that I wanted to keep trying to tap into with Logan Evans. That, like, Emerson Hancock, I think the ship has sailed on him being a starter. I'm actually pretty intrigued about if they're just going to enter spring training with him as a full-on relief pitcher. Like, I feel like that might be better for him, just to focus on his stuff rather than bothering at all to stretch him out as a starter. And I think some of their moves recently have signified that. And listen, if Emerson Hancock becomes even a league average relief pitcher, I think that is a W in my book for 2026. But look, the Logan Evans Tommy John is not an insignificant thing. It sucks. Like, you need guys like that. You need innings. Even if they're bad, you need innings. Like, pitching will get hurt even if they're durable. A durable pitcher in Major League Baseball in 2026 is still going to need some innings covered, most likely. But two moves that they've made recently, both of them were made a day after each other, about 2 weeks ago. They signed Dane Dunning. Am I getting that mixed up? No, they signed Dane Dunning, and they traded for Cooper Criswell, who's on the Mets, and Dane Dunning. We're familiar with Dane Dunning. He was on the Texas Rangers and the Braves last season. Two just depth starters. Dane Dunning is a less impressive depth starter. I think entirely possible he doesn't even make AAA out of camp. Cooper Criswell, on the other hand, is actually a legitimately interesting acquisition that they got on the cheap from the Boston Red Sox. I think there is something there. And I think the Mariners probably see something in Criswell that they think they can tap into. Now, last season, well, the past two seasons, he's started some games and relieved some games because the Red Sox haven't needed him a ton in the rotation, so he has been kind of a swingman for them and has thrown, he didn't throw that many innings last year, threw almost 100 in 2024, but I think he's a legitimate option for them, whether it be out of the pen to start the season or a depth starter, or potentially out of the pen and then being a swingman can fill in the rotation if someone gets hurt. I think this is actually a pretty important acquisition now that Logan Evans has Tommy John. It's not a sexy acquisition, but it's dire, this pitching staff's depth. You look at the staff 1 through 5, Will Gilbert, Castillo, Gerby. Oh, my God. Oh, are we going to call him? Oh, I'm going to call him Gerby from now on. Sorry in advance for calling him Gerby all season, and Bryce Miller, and that is great. I think ceiling-wise, that is a top-5 rotation in baseball. I think floor-wise, it is a top-15 rotation in baseball. Even last season, with how injured they were, it's still pretty much evened out to them being mediocre and average. So I think they're in a good spot there again, but pitching is just, it's like a baby bird's wings. It's just so fragile. And they have Randy Dobnak too in AAA probably this year. Casey Lawrence is still available to be called up and DFA'd 6 times next season, like he was last season. I think we're going to end up seeing a lot of Cooper Criswell this year. And now Roster Resource on Fangraphs has Cooper Criswell as a relief pitcher. And I think it's fair, given as a long reliever. I think, like, given where their bullpen's at, they probably literally need that in their bullpen right now. But I'm skeptical he's going to be there on opening day. But I'm curious how they talk about it. When pitchers and catchers report, and more stuff continues to progress with spring training. I'm curious how we see the coaching staff and like Jerry and Justin Hollander talk about the bullpen and Criswell, because maybe they do just see him as a length guy in the pen, like completely. And that's not a terrible idea, but it's also not the best idea. I am not honestly thrilled with where this bullpen is at. I like Andres Munoz a lot. I love Matt Brash. Edward Bizardo is my boy. Gabe Spire's awesome. Jose Ferrer, we've talked about him. The upside is tantalizing. And then it just falls off into Carlos Vargas, Casey Ligamina, and Cooper Criswell. And I'm not happy about that, because there were relief pitchers available this offseason. Sir Anthony Dominguez was just, I think he just would have been a perfect signing. Maybe like $10 million a year. Expensive, you could say, for a relief pitcher when looking at the Mariners. However, their payroll is going to start the year lower than it was last year, if my calculations are correct. And even if that's not correct, it's going to be pretty close to last year, and it should be higher than that. And I think the bullpen is the remaining place they could have spent the money. And I'm honestly upset that they didn't. Now, it doesn't preclude them from trading for a relief pitcher at the deadline. I'm sure they will be in the mix to add some salary at the deadline. But there were relief pitchers available with a strong major league track record that they could have had. I really wanted Sir Anthony Dominguez. He would have rounded out the pen so nicely. Because I don't want to see as much Carlos Vargas this season as we did last year. I don't think Casey Ligamina is good as much as I enjoy his alma mater. And sure, Cooper Criswell being the length guy, hell yeah. I love having a mop-up guy in the bullpen who can just kind of eat innings at a moment's notice. But I just think there needed to be one more reliever in here. And hell, maybe it's Troy Taylor. Maybe my affinity for him, like Edward Bizardo, happened 2 years too early. And this is the season for him where he's going to actually come into his own and be a good relief pitcher like I think he's going to be. And this is my last season saying that before I give up on him. Maybe that's it. I just don't know. And then the other little wrinkle for this bullpen and starting depth is I think the starting depth can go like Cooper Criswell and who else? Cooper Criswell, Emerson Hancock, Blas Castaño, like Dobnak, Dunning, Lawrence, any of those guys could be considered the next man up when they need a spot start or a couple weeks up on the major league team. I think Kate Anderson can be considered a legitimately depth piece for this rotation in 2026. He could go to the Treya Savage school of shooting through the minors. Not saying that's going to happen. It is incredibly difficult to do that, but it sounds like the Mariners think that could happen. And I think when he was drafted, everyone thought that could happen. He's a college pitcher who just looks like one of those college pitchers who's ready, like almost. He just looks like he could almost skip spring training and be a okay starting pitcher in 2026. And maybe you give him three months in the minor leagues, and he 3 or 4 months, and he just heats it up and he comes up. I think he legitimately could be a depth piece in this rotation next year. And that's fun. And it's a reminder the Mariners had the number 3 pick in the draft in 2025, which I will never stop talking about. I love the draft lottery. Just what an awesome collective bargaining update that was. And I say this about Kate Anderson because I had thought this for all year, for all offseason, like a lot of people have. But just today, on Baseball America, the Mariners farm director, Justin Toole, said this, quote, his performance and what he's able to do on the field will kind of dictate to us, you know, when he's ready, but definitely would anticipate it sooner rather than later, end quote. Now, obviously that's optimistic talk, but like not out of the realm of possibility for Kate Anderson to be a fill-in for this rotation going into October. If there's an injury, or even if he just forces the Mariners' hand and is in the pen or something, I'm intrigued. And I think that's why I'm saying he could be considered a depth piece for next season. I just think it would be like, it'd be a post-June depth piece, and you'd be seeing a healthy dose of Criswell and Dunning-Dobnak before then, if they need to fill some innings in the rotation. But that's on the table for Kate Anderson. And that is all I'm going to talk about Cooper Criswell and Dane Dunning. That is all of the time I have to talk about those guys. One more thing for the Mariners. The Sunday Creams. You got to say goodbye to the Sunday Creams. Now, I didn't know that a lot of people didn't like these. That was news to me. I log on to Mariners Twitter, as I'm wont to do, and I see that they've announced they were due for a new City Connect update, I believe, or something of the sort. And they are wearing their Negro League jerseys, the Seattle Steelheads jerseys, which I like. I love the simplicity of them. I love a simplistic baseball jersey that gets mixed in with, you know, cooler jerseys in the lineup. But and they're pledging $500,000 to, what is it, local black-led baseball and softball initiatives. I think it's very cool. I think a very Seattle Mariners thing for them to do. I do really love this. And the Steelheads jersey, as I've said, is cool. I want to get one of the hats that's just the S, the black S. But this means the Sunday Creams, which have been around for quite some time now, are gone. And I want to salute to the Sunday Creams. It's one of the only jerseys I own. I don't own a ton of jerseys because they're very expensive, and I didn't even buy that one. I think I got it as a gift in high school, which shows you that they've been around for a little bit. And there's no name on the back, but I love those jerseys. I just think they're so good. But a lot of people were like, oh, finally, they're getting rid of those. I think all of you are going to miss them. Maybe not this season, but next season you're going to miss seeing the Creams on Sunday. Because they look so nice on a warm summer Sunday in Seattle. They just are, I just really love them. But it was to my shock that a lot of people didn't share my opinion, which is fine. You're allowed to have that opinion. It's, you know, it's wrong that you don't like an objectively good looking jersey, but fine. No, but the Steelheads one is cool. I think the initiative is great. Like, the meaning behind it is very cool. And it'll be fun to see them playing in those more often. I think seeing teams play in old school baseball jerseys is very cool because of just how simplistic they are. And me, if you know me, I'm very into Negro League history. I think everyone should read more Negro League baseball player biographies because it could teach you a lot about both a very, very cool league and awesome set of players, and also teach you a lot about the history of America at that time, because it was all intertwined with why there had to be the Negro Leagues in the first place. And a lot of these biographies obviously get into that topic. And I think it's really awesome. So it's going to be fun to see those jerseys on the field. I did just, with Rick Riz, I wanted to salute the Sunday Creams. And now that sentence is the first time that's ever been said. I wanted to salute Rick Riz and the Sunday Creams. All at the same time. But no, I really like those jerseys. I will continue to wear mine. I hope they don't get rid of them completely. I hope they keep them in the back of the locker, back of the warehouse, and bring them back at some point, because I do really just think it's a nice jersey to have. maybe replace, I don't know, what jersey hasn't done well recently? I think they haven't really played well in the navy ones as much as those look cool, but I don't know. I think the Mariners have generally very good jerseys, and I'm not one to complain about things that they're wearing. So that is it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Brendan Donovan's a Mariner, finally. Pitchers and catchers are reporting. We're going to have a lot more stuff to talk about, whether it's actually interesting stuff or just has Cal's ass gotten slimmer in the offseason as he walks up to pitchers and catchers reporting in his slacks. I don't know. We'll see. Has Logan Gilbert kept his goatee? Is his hair longer? Does George Kirby look the exact same like he does every single year heading into spring training? We'll find out soon. But no, I appreciate you listening. I hope you have a great rest of your week. And for the first time in February of 2026, go Mariners.